Visit investinvermont.org.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Nice day out there today. Thanks for spending part of it with us. Coming up on the program this morning, full lineup for you today. Coming up in our second hour, we're going to chat about the whole idea of how much food could New England actually produce, given all the problems going on out in California with the drought and whether or not they're going to be able to continue their massive food production. We'll chat about that coming up in hour number two. Also, we'll, in our second hour this morning, talk with filmmaker Jay Craven. We'll head up to the Northeast Kingdom. We'll talk about his new movie that's coming out. And, of course, we'll check in with our White House crew to begin hour number two as well. Love to hear from you throughout the program. It is so easy to reach us. And, you know, we're going to be talking about introverts and extroverts here. And I was thinking to myself, how difficult it must be for those of you that are introverts to pick up the phone and call us. But I am a fellow I, so feel free to give us a jingle. And you can do that at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. Let's welcome back to the program a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Dr. Onri Kozak, who is the author of The Awakened Introvert, Practical Mindfulness Skills to Help You Maximize Your Strengths and Thrive in a Loud and Crazy World. And Arnie is a assistant professor in psychiatry at the University of Vermont College of Medicine. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
This book was published recently. If you got in the University of Vermont College of Medicine, that's pretty good. That name change was only fairly recent.
Well, the college didn't change its name.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Fletcher Allen.
You're right. Right. Good start, huh? Good start to the interview.
All right. Now we're all one.
That's right.
The college and the hospital.
So can you believe it when I say that I'm an introvert?
Yes, I can believe it.
But I'm doing a job that most people would think, oh, you must be an extrovert.
Well, I do. I'm a psychotherapist, so I sit around and talk all day, and oftentimes introverts are attracted to jobs that are helping people, connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
But we pay a price for that.
Mm-hmm. So how are we going to do in this interview if both of us are introverts here?
Well, I remember last time when I was here, we had a really meaningful, rich conversation. And that makes a difference. If we just met in the elevator and had to have chit-chat for even 10 minutes, that would have been more
painful
than sitting and talking, you know, as we will for an hour and really getting into ideas and making a connection. So that way of being is just fine.
Mm-hmm. Let's sort of set some parameters here. Let's talk about some differences. I love the analogy you use between the difference between introverts and extroverts, the rechargeable batteries and the solar panel. What does that mean?
Well, we have different relationships to relationships. So extroverts gain energy by making lots of contacts with people. That conversation in the elevator may be very energizing, whereas for introverts, it's draining. So the more activities and social, especially social activities that we have, we're going to have to withdraw at some point to recharge our batteries, like a rechargeable battery. Whereas the extrovert is like a solar panel, so they're just drawing energy whenever the sun is out. Another analogy I thought of was extroverts, in terms of their social excursions and so forth, are like those people who can eat whatever they want and not gain weight. Whereas us as introverts, we have to be a little more careful about what we decide to consume socially, energetically, because we're going to, that's going to tax our energy potentially, and we just don't have unlimited energy. So that's a couple of different ways to think about the differences in terms of building energy versus draining energy, spending energy versus collecting energy.
It sounds almost, you know, and I got this too, reading your book, there's almost sort of a subliminal judgment, I feel, going on here against introverts.
Well, I think that's been the case for some time, and there is now a pretty robust movement, some even calling it a revolution, to address that bias, that there has been a sense that introversion is an inferior version of extroversion, or they're just not meeting up to those standards. And so there's a recognition that, no, this is a completely valid alternative way of being. It just doesn't fit with the what's predominating in the culture now, which is very, very extroverted, very self-promotional, very high activity, and so forth. So that's created the mismatch. So introverts are saying, hey, listen, this is a completely viable alternative, and actually maybe even a necessary alternative to the direction the culture is going in. And we don't have to feel guilty or bad about how we are, and there's a lot of value in it. There's a lot of value in being quiet and in being able to be in solitude and self-sufficient and the things that introverts tend to gravitate towards.
Is there any sort of explanation why introverts find other people draining and extroverts find them energizing?
Well, what we tend to know is the basic difference. And when we say, when we're talking about introverts and extroverts, we're all a mixture of
right,
both.
Right.
Most of us have a pretty healthy mixture of both sets of traits. So it's really about where our center of gravity is. And so we're talking about relative differences, not absolute differences. But the research tends to suggest that it really can find it in the brain, that extroverts don't have as much stimulation in their brains as people who are more introverted. So they seek stimulation, and they get that stimulation from connecting with people, from doing thrilling activities, and just being very active. Whereas the introvert, and of course we're on a continuum here, so some people will be more, have a lot of internal stimulation going on already, therefore you just don't need as much. And when you're in that stimulating environment, like a cocktail party or some sort of free-form social situation, it can be very overstimulating.
Mm-hmm.
You just can get a sense of being overwhelmed. And so some of it is just basic neurophysiology and how we process information and energy, and you know, everything stems from that.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Dr. Arnie Kozak. You can join us. He's the author of The Awakened Introvert. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Why do you say awakened? What's the deal with that?
Well, I wrote a book a couple of years ago, The Everything Guide to Introversion, basically an encyclopedia of all things related to introversion. And personally and professionally, I've had an interest in mindfulness, meditation, and the Buddhist teachings for over 30 years now. So this next book, I wanted to bring those, the skills and the benefits of mindfulness to introverts, and really what I've been doing for myself all these years as an introvert, learning how to cope and struggle and to deal with the challenges and to use mindfulness to not just cope and deal with the challenges, but to thrive and
mm-hmm.
to really find my place in the world. And the meditation practice has been really critical to that. So awakening is a term we often use in mindfulness to, it speaks to a shift in our way of being, of paying attention, that, you know, the analogy that we kind of sleepwalk through life because we're intending to our internal dialogue and we're not actually paying attention to what's right there in front of us
right. mm-hmm.
all the time. And to awaken is to come out of that kind of self-trance and that talking to ourselves and to actually be present to what is happening. And a Buddha simply means one who has awakened. So the historical Buddha was just somebody who had attained that awakening.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't put up a huge argument against your theory here, but can you explain a little bit more the idea that we're living in a society that is really geared towards extroverts?
Yeah. So there are a number of things we can point to that support that sense. So there's the workplace. And more there's a loss of privacy in the workplace as corporations move to an open plan office spaces.
Mm-hmm.
There's much more emphasis on collaboration and brainstorming, group brainstorming, even though the data that supports this is pretty nominal or just doesn't support it. There are a number of not so flattering terms that have been used to describe what's going on in our culture now, the age of narcissism or the age of self-importance, that it's the person who promotes themselves that gets promoted, that gets recognized, and that tends to get valued in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Again. And of course, that self-promotion carries on in our personal life with social media. And we're also just living in a time where, if we think about a more introverted way of culture, would have periods of time for reflection, for solitude, for quiet. Where is that?
Right.
It's non-existent.
Right.
Potentially. We live in noisy, crowded cities, not here in Vermont. We're fortunate and exceptional in that way. We're constantly inundated with information. You can have, carry around supercomputers in our back pockets and always have access to information, and not just information, but interactive information, where there may be an expectation that you need to produce content, status updates, and other things.
I mean, the fact that people say you're not on Facebook, I mean, the expectation really is that you are.
You are, and you need
and
to...
And what's wrong with you?
Right, and you need to produce in order to maintain a sense of relevance. I think the quiet is also squeezed out by contemporary parenting culture, where parents spend, are really burdened by taking care of their kids. I mean, they're doing more and more for their kids. And the soccer leagues and the hockey, and they're constantly chauffeuring and doing, and the kids, it's not great for the kids either, because they're overscheduled too, and the parents are overscheduled and stressed and harried, and it's, so there's really very few opportunities for the average person to experience quiet, restfulness, peacefulness. I mean, sometimes that's just by default becomes plopping in front of the TV, which I don't really think qualifies as a good mm-hmm. restful solitude. So the culture is always being on, always having demands upon us, always needing to produce. It's vocal. It's a lot of energy going out, and so that's a more of an extroverted way of being. Doesn't mean that everybody is. There are more extroverts. There are a lot of us introverts who have an introvert preference who are forced into extrovert roles, maybe not even realizing it. But it's more just that extroverted quality has taken over.
244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. I'm thinking other societies, and I'm thinking places like Japan. Is that a place that sort of reveres the introvert, or is that just sort of an illusion?
Well, I think that Asian cultures tend to be more introverted. Although, if you go to Tokyo, I'm sure it's quite extroverted.
Overstimulating.
There's a lot of stimulation there. But I think that, certainly in Japan, the Buddhist traditions are still very strong and revered there. And there are places, gardens and temples where you can go and mm-hmm. and be more quiet. But again, these are generalizations. I mean, Scandinavia and Asia tend to be the places where introvert values are more recognized and in play.
Mm-hmm. So what's the acid test for you to determine for yourself whether you're an introvert or extrovert? I mean, I've heard this idea that on a Friday night you want to either go to a party or you want to just chill at your house. Is that a fair one?
That's a good one.
Give me another couple of ones that would sort of delineate between the two.
Do you pick up the phone or do you let your calls go to voicemail? Do you prefer to email versus make phone calls? That to me is a big acid test. Would you rather just scrounge around and make dinner out of what you have in your cabinets rather than go out to the store? How do you feel after a big social, you know, like having a visitor come? Somebody you may enjoy and love and have fun. How do you feel after a day of or several days of a visit? Is it, you know, for me that's, you know, tends to be draining. So that, you know, to me lets me know that's, and then I need any time I reach out, I need to reach back in and recollect myself in solitude.
Mm-hmm. Is it the same drain that you feel from your work dealing with your clients as it is interacting with, you know, maybe not your best friends, but acquaintances and going to that cocktail party? Is it the same drain?
No, it's different in the same way we were talking at the very beginning, that it's the type of interaction that makes the difference. So something that's more superficial or informal, I find tends to be more draining, less satisfying. When the interaction can be more in depth and more meaningful, as it would be in a psychotherapy context, then it's different. It's not experienced in the same way. And as well, when I'm in, well, I try to do this in all the situations I'm in, but I try to bring that sense of mindfulness to it so that it helps me to modulate my energy in a way so that it's, you know, the more present I am, the less drained I'll mm-hmm. feel by mm-hmm. it. The more I'm resisting a situation, like, oh, God, I don't want to be here, and this is, you know, I'd rather be somewhere else, and, you know, like at a party situation.
Yeah, time goes slow, much more slowly right. when you do that.
So yeah, bring mindfulness to any situation will help with that. But some situations, yes, different. They just naturally pull for different kinds of energy.
Well, and I'm also just thinking that one of them's one-on-one, the other sort of more a mass of people. That makes a difference, doesn't
sure.
it?
Yeah, it does. And the more people, the less formal it is. I mean, if I'm up in front of a group teaching 50, 100 people, doesn't matter. If there's a formal structure to it, that's one thing. But if it's loose and free without that clear structure, then it would be less enjoyable for me.
How do you, this idea of mindfulness, I think of that as that idea of being present, that, mm-hmm. you know, you're really, I'm not, you know, thinking about what I'm going to do this afternoon as I'm talking to you or whatever. So how do you, what do you do to practice that, to hone that skill?
Well, you can actually do meditation practice. So one basic form of mindfulness practice is to, you find a quiet place, or not even quiet, but just find a place to sit down, and you bring your attention to the process of your breathing. And as you breathe in and out, it creates physical sensations. And you can focus your attention, anchor your attention on those physical sensations. And what you'll find is in a few seconds, your attention will go to the future or to the past, or will be having opinions about the present. And the practice is recognizing that and then redirecting your attention to the breath sensations that are happening now. And then it's just this process of back and forth attention. So it's not about clearing your mind or really bringing yourself into any particular state,
mm-hmm.
but rather training your attention to know where it is and to be able to redirect it at will like that. So you can do the sitting and breathing practice. There's walking practice, and there's guidance for all these practices in the book. Walking practice is a lovely practice as a way, because we're always walking, so we can use that time to have, in a sense, some portable solitude and to recharge our batteries as we move in between situations. And again, bring our attention to the physical feelings of walking and the sensations, what we see, what we hear, what we feel as we walk. So anything that gets us, any time we redirect our attention from that internal dialogue, the constant stories in our heads, what neuroscientists call the default mode network of the brain, which just involved with self-referential thinking all the time, will help us to be mindful.
244-1777 is our local number, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let's go back here. So the upside of being an introvert is what?
Well, there are many values, advantages. I think for me, the biggest one is self-sufficiency, that we can be more independent, that we don't need all that stimulation, either through people or activities, in order to be content or happy, that we can, in a sense, entertain ourselves and be content in less highly charged situations. And there's a quote in the book here from the 17th century French philosopher Pascal, said, basically, all men's miseries derive from the simple fact that he can't sit quietly alone in his room, which, if that was true in the 17th century, is even more so now, acutely so. So we have, introverts are already more comfortable, more able to do that, to be able to sit and, you know, entertain ourselves with our own thoughts or with reading or just, you know, quieter types of activities.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that sometimes comes creativity, thoughtfulness, and introspection. So these are, I think, the advantages of introversion.
Can introverts change to an extrovert, and can extroverts change to an introvert?
Well, if introversion is based in temperament, basic temperament, the way we're born into the world and evolves as a function of personality, which is relatively stable.
Mm-hmm.
So we wouldn't really expect major shifts in that personality. I mean, we can certainly see changes that in certain times in your life you may be in a more extroverted or introverted role. Things may change over time, but the preference probably doesn't change a lot. The underlying preference or your comfort zone probably stays relatively stable, because it's not just behavior, it's the tendency, or it's like to say the center of gravity where we feel most comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Responding. So,
like if you ran for president, you'd probably have to become an extrovert or something like that, right?
Yeah,
wow.
That would be difficult.
Your nightmare, right? So you're, as an introvert, your worst nightmare is what?
Oh. You know.
Four parties. You got to go to four Christmas parties tonight.
Yeah, that would be tough. I mean, unrelenting or a lot of obligations without opportunity to rest and recharge can be difficult. Now, if I can do my meditation practices, that will help a lot in mm-hmm. terms of being able to deal with whatever situations are coming at me. But, you know, sometimes like if I'm at the supermarket checkout, if I'm in a certain mood, I might want to chat with the person standing next to me, but most times I really don't mm-hmm. want to have that kind of elevator conversation with people. And it's not that I can't do it. I don't know, something about it just doesn't
light your fire.
I just don't know what it is, but it's just I find it stressful.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once we got talking about something, some common interest, and we actually started having a conversation about something, then it would be different. And I tell a story in the book about a Christmas party that I went to. Now, I went deliberately late because I wanted to get there once the party had established itself.
Hour and a half late, and you were one of the first people to show up.
Yeah, I still was like amongst the early adopters, and
you knew no one there.
Very few people there, so there wasn't enough people to kind of hide out and just do my. I want to, and this is true for introverts, that we like to get into a situation and observe it first before we jump in. And then that's like the basic biology of introversion. There's that restraint, the holding back, whereas the extrovert just jumps in and starts engaging right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't do that. And so it was very uncomfortable. So I had to start up a conversation with somebody I didn't know. And, you know, go through all of the small talk and maybe get to the richer stuff underneath.
You didn't start off with, let's talk about the meaning of life.
No, and I mentioned that. It's like deep sea diving. You can't just go right down to to the bottom.
Right.
You have to go down, acclimate gradually, or else you'll just explode.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's hard to just go for the meaning jugular like that with most people is too much. But so mostly I just kind of stood around awkwardly until more people came, and then some people I actually knew came, and we started having some good conversations, and there were several conversations I had that evening, and that made the experience felt satisfying and meaningful. But I was also very full at that point. I was done. I was ready to go home and be by myself.
Let's go to Plainfield. Michelle, good morning.
Hi. I wanted to give an example of sort of a introverted, extroverted. I think of myself as kind of a social personality on an introverted temperament. Like my base is introverted, but I really like being around people. So if I'm at a party or in a big group, I might be having a lovely time chatting with this one, talking to that one, and then all of a sudden, I've got to leave. I have got to get out of here. I've got to be by myself or just with one person.
Right.
And I think of that as kind of my introverted temperament, bursting out. So I just wanted to give that as an example of a kind of mix. And then I'd be interested in Arnie talking a little bit about introversion and the Buddhist principle of aversion, and whether they're similar or not similar, or what he thinks about that. And I'll take it off the air.
Okay.
Thank you, Michelle.
Let me do this. We'll do a quick piece of business here. We'll come back and continue our discussion. We've been talking with Arnie Kozak. He's the author of The Awakened Introvert. You can join us at 244-1777, toll free 877-291-8255. We'll be back right after this.
We just reached 380 delivered during the car, truck, and SUV challenge at Lamoille Valley Ford. Hi, I'm Dan Keene, owner of Lamoille Valley. Folks, my two teams need to sell just 20 more vehicles to reach our combined goal of 400 vehicles sold by April 30th. That means if you want a great deal on your next car or truck, you want to listen to this. Right now, Ford has some of the best finance and lease deals we've seen in years on some of our hottest selling models like Ford Focus, Fusion, Escape, and F-150. And if you like a big selection, you'll be happy at Lamoille Valley Ford because our lot is jam-packed with over 400 new and used vehicles to choose from, and we're making crazy deals to reach our goal. Come see for yourself why Lamoille Valley Ford is one of the fastest-growing Ford dealers in New England. It's because at Lamoille Valley Ford, we know price matters. So drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Hardwick and the Car, Truck, and SUV Challenge happening right now at Lamoille Valley Ford.
Big news. Granite Hills Credit Union has just lowered our auto loan rate. Now you can buy or refinance a car, motorcycle, or boat with a great fixed rate of 1.99% for 60 months for new new or used vehicle. We've got money to lend right now with this unbelievable low rate of 1.99%. This is a limited time offer that ends on May 22nd, 2015. So you have to act fast. Not a member of Granite Hills? Not a problem. We're open to the community. Act now before our loan special is gone. This low loan rate of 1.99% for a car, motorcycle, or boat ends on May 22nd. And remember, we can help you refinance too. Apply online at granitehills.org or call today to take advantage of low loan rates from Granite Hills, your hometown credit union.
At Granite Hills Credit Union, the difference is you.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
Hi, this is Kathy.
And this is Kate, and we are excited to announce the opening of our new women's clothing store, Ruelle Boutique, offering a new shopping experience in historic downtown Waterbury.
At Ruelle, you will find fun, fresh, and trendy styles. Yes, something for everyone, all at a great price.
Some of our clothing brands include Dylan, Mystery, Downey's Basics, Charisma, Yoga Jeans, Shoes by Springstep and Anu, and Tidewater Flip Flops.
Complete your wardrobe with our stylish accessories, including hobo handbags and wallets, M-Rena layering tees and leggings, hanky-panky undergarments, kitsch jewelry and hair ties, plus scarves, hats, and that perfect shade of lip gloss.
Ruelle's grand opening is May 2nd at 11 o'clock with a welcoming reception from 4 to 8 p.m., serving hors d'oeuvres and sweet treats.
We look forward to seeing you at Ruelle Boutique. It's fun, it's fresh, and you'll love the way you dress. Find us at 21 Stowe Street in historic downtown Waterbury.
All right, back, continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning about introverts and by also extroverts by comparison. Arnie Kozak is the author of The Awakened Introvert, and he practices up in Burlington. So we had a couple of questions there from Michelle. One, you remember what they were.
Right. So, Michelle, thanks for your call. And your description is very... it highlights some very important aspects of introversion. And one of the myths is that introverts don't have social skills. So as you said, you're very sociable. And, you know, I'm assuming you have great social skills, as most introverts do. But because of your underlying... that sociability doesn't make you an extrovert or doesn't even define extroversion. It's the underlying sense that... you got to your saturation point and then you were done. It's like you fell off the cliff and your energy had gotten to a certain point and you just need to get out. And that's, I think, how it is for many of us. I mean, I have, I think, a full range of social skills when I choose to employ them, but then I get to a certain point where I've had enough. Now, your second question...
Do you leave parties without saying goodbye to people?
I try to make an attempt to at least... say goodbye to the host or something. But
you don't like stand up in the room and say, you know, like, I'm leaving now.
Yeah, see everybody. No, I try to not draw that much attention to myself. Usually will slip out and recognizing that nobody's going to notice or care.
Right.
You know, it's not, might be my own grandiosity to think, oh my God, everybody's, where did Arnie go?
Party's just, over. He's left.
They're like just busy doing their own,
right.
their own thing. So, you know, that's fine. But I might send a note, a thank you note. I mean, that's maybe old school, but afterwards, just because that, the writing and the connecting is more meaningful. But yeah, and of course, when you attempt to say goodbye, you just get sucked into
and
more.
Right. No, don't go. Come on, stay.
Or you bump it to something else. Yeah. And, you know, so it just becomes difficult.
Like a nightmare.
Well... maybe, although sometimes some really good things come out of staying longer and you meet somebody and you, an opportunity or, you know, a connection comes out of that. So, you know, we want to be flexible. And I'll segue into the second part of the question with the question about aversion, the Buddhist notion of aversion and an introversion. And so aversion is one of the three fires that the Buddha talked about. And the first is greed or attachment, that we reach out for things, we want things, we try to acquire things. Aversion is the opposite, the pushing away, the not wanting things, the the disliking things. So you know, in any given moment, we're these two forces are active. We're liking or disliking, and our mind is generating opinions about everything that's happening, and we want to hold on to the things that we like,
right,
and we want to push away the things that we don't like. And so the more things that we don't like, the more things we have to push away, the more energy we spend on that, the more dissatisfied we are. And this can lead to the third fire, which is a sense of is sometimes translated as delusion or confusion, that we don't understand that things are always changing, and so that we really can't hold on to them. And even if something is unpleasant, it's going to dissipate at some point. So both introverts and extroverts are subject to aversion, probably in equal measures, but there'll be different things that they find aversive. So in that situation, might be in a situation where we can't leave the party. We're in the midst of something that we are, it would just be too costly, or it's just, we just don't have a means of escape. So we're stuck in a situation that is aversive. It's unpleasant. It's, we don't have the energy, or we just don't want to be there. And that presents us with a situation that we can suffer and be very dissatisfied and feel very put upon by in that situation. Or if we want to engage the Buddha's wisdom, we say, okay, we recognize that the mind views this as aversive, but we want to start to back away from that and not to identify with that, to see that, okay, you know, this is unpleasant, but my well-being doesn't have to depend on whether things whether I have lots of pleasantness or I'm free from unpleasantness in every situation. And then we can start to use the mindfulness practice or attention to really peel away from the story of, oh, this is awful, I don't like this, I don't want to be here, this is, how did I get myself in this situation? So there's that whole storyline. And come into our bodies, in a sense, to come into this, to feel that tension in the body, to feel that sense of whatever that sense of the energy is I need to escape. We can sit with that in the body and actually do the breathing meditation, and just pay attention to the situation itself. There's an exercise in here I call, you know, it's being an anthropologist. So we're in a situation, maybe we don't want to be there, but there are ways that we can engage our attention that will make it less unpleasant, will not give rise to as much aversion. So when we pay attention, like an anthropologist, we go in and we're observing. We're observing what's going on inside and out. So a good scientist observes, and you know, you can watch the extroverts even with a sense of fascination. How do they do that? That's amazing, rather than, oh God, I need to get out of here. So one has interest and the other has resistance. So the aversion arises when we're in resistance, and then a sense of equanimity, peacefulness can arise when we bring interest to situations that might otherwise be unpleasant.
Kind of just ride it out and observe.
Yeah,
and learn.
But ride it out, but also not just, you know, biding your time and white knuckling it, but actually relaxing into the situation and letting it unfold, and maybe something will surprise you. Maybe something else will emerge.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or you can always act like your phone's ringing and say, take that fake call.
Right. Or you can just stage that. You need to call me at, you know, 10 p.m. and then you can
bail me out. Let's go to Randolph Center. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
This is so interesting to hear yourself described on the radio.
You should you should read the book. It's
I will.
Freaky.
I'm actually going to read the book. And I am an introvert, but I have a very extrovert type of job. I'm out, you know, always talking with people, talking with small groups, and in front of the public all the time. And, you know, sometimes I don't look forward to those situations, but then, or even being in a social party, you know, in a party that maybe you have to go to for business, or a convention where there are hundreds of people, very intimidating and feeling like, how am I going to make it through this? But then once I'm there, you know, the dread goes away, and then all of a sudden, you know, if someone saw me in that social situation, they would think she's not introverted.
Yeah, you're having a great time, and then you don't leave, right?
Yeah. That happens, you know, and I guess also being newly a single person, not as part of a couple in the last couple of years, that has brought on a whole new type of situation where sometimes all of a sudden I freeze and I think, I've got to get out of here. But then if you take that extra step, you know, as you were just explaining, and try to learn something or gain something from someone there, sometimes that will go away and you just kind of ride it out, as you say. But
That's interesting. I've never heard anybody describe that. So it's different for you not being part of a couple. How? You're kind of you're on your own?
Just recently being at a friend's wedding. I mean, it was fun. You know, the wedding, the cocktail hour, the dinner, wonderful. You know, socializing, sitting, talking, chatting. Although before, I did have that sense of, oh, boy, this is, but then it was fun. But then after dinner, I got that, now what?
Was your previous partner an extrovert?
No, I think he was probably very much like myself, too. You know, really happy just to be together, be at home, do our thing. We didn't need other people to, you know, entertain us or do anything. But then in a social situation, great. Boom. You know, we'd be out there talking and whatever. So,
yeah.
But it's such an interesting topic. And I think if you can recognize it, it can really help you. So that you don't think, gosh, I'm a weirdo, you know, or, you know, we're not. It's just a different makeup. And one of the things I recognized not that long ago when I was growing up as a child, I always heard, gosh, Mary is so quiet, you hardly know she's in the room. And I think that helped develop my introverted type personality, you know, because I thought that was a positive.
So. Interesting.
Anyway, but thank you very much for listening.
Well, thank you for your call.
Yeah, you're welcome, Marion. You touch on a number of important points, and you know very clearly you were an introvert growing up, and that quietness. And it's good that you experienced it positively, because a lot of kids get the message that you shouldn't be so quiet, or
speak
you
up.
Should be more demonstrative and. In order to get recognized, that's often the case. But it's the knowledge about how we are and what our preferences are can be self-empowering. And in the situations you describe, I mean, so in your work, since you have this high energy, social energy load on you, it behooves you to really take care of yourself around your work. So making sure that you're, you know, rested and recharged as you go into these situations. Some of the exercises in the book can help you to actually work with your energy during those situations so that it's less draining. And then taking care of yourself afterwards to restore your energies. And that's, I think, key for introverts who are in extroverted types of professions and situations. You also touched on, there was a study that suggested that introverts sometimes make what are called prediction errors, that we anticipate a situation and we don't think we're going to enjoy it, but when you actually do it, you actually enjoy it more than you thought you would. So it can be helpful at times to just know that and to challenge ourselves, to know when to push and when to take care of ourselves and not push. And that's sort of the wisdom of knowing ourselves. But, at times that there's this abstract aversion. Oh, that's going to be awful. But when we actually go through it, it may not be so bad.
Yeah, I totally relate to that. So the education system, would it be fair to say the education system has a bias against introverts, kids who are introverts in school?
Absolutely.
So what do you do if you're a parent of a kid who's an introvert?
Well, I mean, half the kids probably are introverts. But again, most of us are going to be a mix. So not a predominantly
pure,
you know, strong introverts. But, you know, let's say, you know, at least 5% of kids would be very, very introverted. There's the introvert revolution is helping parents and kids and educators to recognize this and to offer alternative types of activities that to the unrelenting busyness of a classroom is probably not the best way to educate extroverts included. So having quiet time, and I think there's a movement that's going to, you know, that's a growing awareness of that in education. I'm going to be finding out more about that. My next book project is going to be a book for introverted teens. So by the time they get into high school, things are somewhat different, but, you know, I'll have a better sense of that in this summer. I'll get into that.
Moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope, where they can help you with any and all printing jobs, whether you need new envelopes, new letterhead, maybe you have a nice trifold brochure as part of your business, or maybe you're publishing your memoirs. You know, you could even publish your introvert book at Jet Service, and you could do that. Give them a call at 229-9335, and they're on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. Whit, good morning. How are you?
Well, good morning, Mark. It's been a while since I talked to you, and what a fascinating subject in social psychology we talk about. I've often thought, because I'm an introvert, I would like to write a book as well about it, my experiences. The most difficult time for an introvert is when you're a kid. Because you learn in a different way. You work best on one-on-one. And the teacher may say, okay, today we're gonna do something in math class, and we're going to have a group. So we're going to go off in groups of five or something. This is horrible for an introvert. Mm-hmm. This is not the way we learn. And when I was in Vermont a while back, I had to stay for 2 weeks with a nice guy. He's a wonderful man. But he is an unbelievable extrovert, and he completely misunderstood me. Now, they always say that when you're living with somebody, that house guests grow stale like tuna after about 3 days. But he started to attack me and just had absolutely no understanding of what introversion was about. So I could have no conversation with him. He had some people that would call him to go out to dinner, or he was going golfing or something. And then he would blame me because I wanted to just stay quietly at the house and do something on my computer. And I mean, I'm not going to go to his house again, because this situation between extroverts and introverts is just one that's so misunderstood. I wish people, I wish you well with your book, sir, because there is so much misunderstanding about it. And I think we could all live better if we understood each other better.
Let me have them comment. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, great, great observation. So one component is education. We just need to, if extroverts understand that not everybody is like them and doesn't need to be or can't be, that education that can lead to some better sense. And then it's a negotiation process after that. So once we educate them, either, you know, by ourselves or they read something, then we have to negotiate how to balance the energies and the demands. So this guy wanted to be more social and had the expectations that you should do that with him. And, you know, part of that may have been the lack of understanding, the lack of education. Therefore, he took it personally. You didn't want to spend time with him, and that, since for him, that's what's meaningful and valuable. He just
assumes everybody's like him.
Yeah, assumes everybody's like him. Assumes that this is a slight against him, whereas this is something you need to do in order to take care of yourself. So, I mean, extroverts, are completely capable of compassion and empathy and all of that, but they just need to have you know, the person you're dealing with needs to have an understanding. And then it's a negotiation process, and we were talking about this. And, you know, you may not want to go to, you may not want to go to all these events, but you may choose to go to some.
Right.
And it's a judicious thing, and it's negotiated. And,
with like 9 weeks in between each event.
Well, you know, sometimes you have to push yourself depending on the situation.
Right.
And you can use the techniques in the book to actually fortify yourself and recharge yourself in those situations. But and especially for couples, you know, when this is a situation with your life partner, it's a much more challenging and ongoing situation.
Do opposites attract in this situation?
Well, sure, at times they do. Introverts are attracted to extroverts because they tend to draw them out into the world. Extroverts may be attracted to the quiet presence of the introvert. But there are plenty of introvert-extrovert couples as well. But for the introvert to let the extrovert know that I need to withdraw into myself, not to get away from you, but so that I can be more present with you when I am together, when we do something together.
Mm-hmm.
I need that alone time in order to be more present. So instead of seeing the withdrawal as some sort of
rejection,
or rejection, it's in the service of a future connection.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Essex. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, good morning, Mark and Arnie. A strange question, okay?
Oh, good.
I was mindful, though. I pulled off the road to make this call. The Dalai Lama, introvert, extrovert, mix of both, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
Okay,
nice. All right.
Well, I don't know His Holiness personally, so I wouldn't know. I mean, he certainly is very sociable and certainly spends a lot of time in social situations, public speaking and talking. It would really revolve around how he feels as a result of all that socializing. Does he feel energized, and does he just crave it? Well, you know, craving, he would probably try to work against that craving, but, you know, he might enjoy it and really find it energizing. And if that case, he would be more extroverted. But as a general rule, and this is, there's a whole chapter in the book on the Buddha was an introvert. And I think that if you go to a Buddhist monastery or any meditation retreat center, most of the people you find there are going to be introverts, because who else is going to be attracted to the interior practice and the quiet and the relative
introspection kind of big part of the word.
Relative lack of stimulation that comes in a meditation retreat. There's no reading, no writing, no cell phone, no just sitting with your own experience. So that's something that it's going to pull for introverts. Now, the Dalai Lama didn't choose his path. I mean, he was selected. I mean, they went out and found him and took him out of his home and put him into the monastery and training. So who knows? I mean, he could be an extrovert who's been an introvert who's been put into a very extroverted role, or he might have been an extrovert who got put into a monastic role, and he's probably, like most of us, has a mixture of both traits. But we'd have to ask him personally to find out.
Or get the YouTube video of what he's like really behind the scenes, you know, really wild and crazy kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How can people find your book?
Well, I think the official release date is Friday, so it may be showing up in bookstores on Friday. I know it is already shipping online at Amazon and other places, so basically wherever books are sold,
and,
people can find it.
Look for the lonely dandelion on the front.
It's not lonely. It's solitary, lonely.
But
that's an important distinction.
Well, no, you're right. It does have a little smirk on its face.
It's very happy to be by itself.
Quiet time now, introvert. Thank you very much for joining us. Arnie Kozak, our guest, the Awakened Introvert. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren and the flagship AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. News is next.
AP Radio News.